meditations. Concentration is because you're going to repeat the phrases that I will say silently to yourself. For instance, a phrase is, may I be filled with loving kindness. So when I say it, then you're going to say it silently to yourself. So in the repetition, it helps you to concentrate. So that's why it's a concentration practice. And in concentration, what happens is your mind, when it focuses, it actually does literally get calmer. And of course, when your mind's calmer, your body will get calmer too. With a lot of concentration tendency is both mind and body will get more easeful. So that's why concentration is a really useful practice and almost always should be used in the beginning of any meditation. And then, now metta, remember, is a quality of heart-mind that traditionally it is talked about as to be cultivated. I like to think of it as much more to access it in the sense that we all have a sense of what kindness, goodwill, friendliness, peace and ease, happiness is. And yet sometimes it's hard to connect to that, especially during challenging times. So in this meditation, by saying it, right, and the phrases will be may I or let it be possible or some version of that. And that, to me, it's a little bit like metta is something you have, it's a muscle you have, and we're just pumping your muscle, right? We're strengthening it so that when you need it, you have the strength for it. So ways of generating it and accessing and strengthening it is really important. That the most important thing in all the Brahmavihara, and I'll just say it as metta, is the sincerity of the phrase. So you have to have some sense that it's true and possible. So all you have to connect to is that it's true and possible. Just even if a little bit, like if I say, let us be happy all the days of our lives, and you're like, I don't know about all the days of my life, then you could just say, may I be happy, and just stop at that when you say it to yourself, because you need to really know it. Then the other thing is there are categories. So in our practice, in Buddhism in general, and definitely with the Brahmaviharas, the idea is that we know it for ourselves, and then we learn to extend it bigger and bigger. So the classic categories are, you get a hand about this at the end. I don't hand it out now because then you won't be deep listening to me and you should be reading your paper, right? But, and you'll get a handout, so don't worry. Classically, the first category is ourselves. I will say that, I don't know if you ever heard the story, the Dalai Lama, when he first interacted with Westerners, he was just flabbergasted that self-hatred is such a big thing in the West. And also hatred of your mother is a big thing in the West that he just didn't understand, right? They have a whole practice where you visualize everyone as your mother. And I guess when he got here, he was like, what? What? Not my mother. You haven't met my mother. So since it has to be true and possible, if this is where the factual truth is not so important as the intention, right? Your sincerity is much more important. So when you go through the categories, which I'll just name them now, yourself, traditionally the next category is called the benefactor or the teacher. These days we say a good friend, right? Someone who is really easy to give loving kindness to and you know will receive it easily. There's no struggle there. So maybe your grandma, and not your mother or your granddad or whatever, right? Or the other thing, it doesn't have to be somebody you know in real life. So if right now you're like, gosh, I don't know who I can totally be sincere and know will receive, but you think, oh, Thich Nhat Hanh or the Dalai Lama, then you can visualize them. So we want to visualize each of the category, either a specific person that you know or a group of people. However, it does need to be an alive person, right? This is probably a Buddhist thing that you just hold this in. If you don't believe this, just kind of hold it as what supports the practice. The reason it needs to be an alive person is, one, we think it's very possible, these expressions, so you're actually, and you're it's actually able to be given or sent out, like prayer. So it needs to reach the person. So let's say like my grandma Greta died a long time ago. But if I say, may grandma Greta feel loving kindness, when I like to say, now she could be Bob because of reincarnation. So it might not reach her, right? Because I'm calling her Greta. So that's the idea. So that's why it needs to be an alive person. Hold it however you want. Next category is called the neutral person, where there's no lot of hatred or love for, clinging love, right? So a mild person, someone you don't know and you have no strong reaction to. Remember, we're working to extend. Then the next category classically is called the enemy. These days we say a difficult or challenging person. I want you to pick a very little challenging and difficult person, especially if it's their first time doing metta. And the reason for that, again, is sincerity has to be true, more true than anything. And this is not a practice to fix anybody, including yourself, okay? So maybe if you have that client that it's really hard to be kind to, maybe pick a less difficult client. Or the other thing about this is, when we're doing it and you feel the sincerity, let's say you pick, you know, Joe, and then as you're starting to do it, no, and I'm not sure if I can be sincere with Joe, then switch the person. It's totally okay, right? Just switch to a different person, or even switch to a different category if you just can't hang in there. Because we're strengthening our muscle, but we don't want to hurt ourselves. So, right, if the weight's too heavy, just take less weight off, right? There's no making anything. And the last category is all beings, without exception. So if there's one person or a group of people that you just can't imagine, then you can imagine it as sending the energy of this wanting kindness or happiness far and wide. Does that make sense? Then the other great thing about the Brahmavihara meditation is because we believe it's a real energy and that you can send it out, there are no contractions or pain as you're doing this. So if you're sitting cross-legged and then, you know, your back starts to hurt, feel free to move, right? I will say I've done retreat where people lie down for this. So I wouldn't really recommend it right now because you guys just ate, right? So that means they're probably more like a nap and not a meditation. But, you know, go for it. Just, you know, if you snore, I might go, may you be filled with loving kindness, right? No, I'm just kidding about that part. Okay, ready? Okay, want to get a comfortable position? So remember, I will say the category. You will say the name or names of people. And I wouldn't go quite as far as to go, you know, may Joe, Jack, Henry, blah, blah, blah. Just say a group of people if you're doing a group. All my siblings or something like that. Okay? All right, here we go. Three bells to start, one to end. We'll say that the beginning of meditation, often the Buddha will also talk about qualities besides the four Brahmavihara that's really easy to, that could bring you lots of ease. And one of those is called gratitude. So just for a minute, just bring up gratitude for the time that you had at lunch, the food you ate, yourself and all the people. Made that food possible. Even the rain and the sun and the wind. Just a sense of gratitude. And then again, because the body is always present, come into that posture point or that breath point we've been accessing all day. And really just connect to that. And remember again, the connection is easeful. There's no making, there's no doing. This open, non-judgmental awareness, that kind of connection. A full knowing, you could say. All right, so now remember that I will say a phrase. You could tweak it a little bit. Let's say I say goodwill and you like loving kindness, then you could say loving kindness instead. However, the meditation should not be a lot of struggle about what is right or wrong. Just trust what comes up. There'll be another line that you can, you know, adjust if needed. And as much as possible, just have trust and faith in your sincerity. And however it comes up. So first you're going to visualize yourself. Any sense of yourself. Ah yes, and this is where also the factual truth isn't so important. At any point, if it's hard to imagine yourself, let's say you imagine yourself as you are right now, even the clothes you're wearing today, and then it's just hard to make it feel true, whatever phrase we say, then you can visualize yourself as any sense of yourself. Could be as a baby, as a grand person, even as a flower or an animal. Any sense of self that can receive with fullness these wishes for yourself. I say the phrase, you repeat it silently to yourself. May I be filled with loving kindness all the days of my life. Let me know well-being whenever I need it. May I know that inner and outer safety is my birthright. Let me be able to access peace and ease here and now. And may I know true happiness all the days of my life. On the next inhale, you're going to connect with any sense that you can know that these are true and possible. And on the exhale, you're going to feel it permeating every pore of your being without exception. And if that's hard, then any sense of yourself that can receive this, just let it absorb. And then in the next couple breaths, just check in with yourself. Again, perhaps a posture point or a breath point. Connect to your sense of sincerity. And for some people during this meditation, sometimes it helps to touch your heart space. Put your hand there and leave it there. Or for some, it's touching the ground like the Buddha did. Wherever it is. And now you're going to visualize a benefactor or a good friend. Someone where it's really easy to wish these wishes for, and you know that they will receive easily. No stickiness in any way. I say the category, you say the name or names. May my good friend know unconditional friendliness here and now. Let this benefactor know good health whenever they need it. And may these good friends know that inner and outer safety is possible. May the good friend know peace and ease, however they define it. And may my good friends know happiness all the days of their lives. On the next inhale, connect with any part of you that know that these wishes are true and possible. And on the exhale, you're going to send it to this good friend or good friends with fullness of heart, no strings attached, for them to do with as they wish, freely given. And then in the next couple of breaths, check in with yourself. Connect with how you know your sincerity. And now you're going to visualize a neutral person or persons. No big love or hate. May the neutral people know goodwill whenever they need it. Let the stranger know a sense of well-being whenever he, she, or they need it. May the neutral person know that inner and outer safety is possible. Let the neutral person know peace and ease, however they define it, all the days of their lives. And may they know true happiness here and now. On the next inhale, connect with however you know that is true and possible. And on the exhale, you're going to send it to the neutral person or persons to do with as they wish, freely given, with fullness of heart. And again, connect with yourself. Feel your goodwill, your kindness. Just have trust and faith. And see if it's possible to just locate it in one part of your body, where you don't have to question that. In that spot, you fully know kindness, goodwill, unconditional friendliness. And now visualize a difficult or challenging person, and I would pick a very light one. And if it's yourself, then do pick a self that can receive. Remember, you're not trying to fix them or yourselves, so it's just sincere. Sincere is key. May this difficult person know loving kindness here and now. Let this challenging person know a sense of well-being, however they define it, whenever they need it. May the challenging people know inner and outer safety as their birthright. And let peace and ease be known by the difficult person whenever they need it. And may the challenging person know true happiness all the days of their lives. On the next inhale, connect with where you know that is true and possible. And on the exhale, you're going to send it to this person, freely given to do with as they wish. No strings attached. And now visualize all beings without exception. Connect with your sincerity of heart. May all beings be filled with unconditional friendliness. Let everyone, including this one, know a sense of well-being whenever we need it. And may everyone in our world and all worlds know inner and outer safety as our birthright. And let everyone, without exception, be able to access peace and ease here and now. And may everyone in this room, at Spirit Rock, in Marin, in California, in this world, and in all worlds, know true happiness all the days of our lives. On the inhale, connect with any sense that you know this is true and possible. And on the exhale, you're going to feel it permeating all the pores of your being, and then extending in all directions and all times without exception. And then in the next breath or two, few breaths, just connect their self, your sense of groundedness, your sense of good-heartedness. Right. Any questions or comments about that? Feel more settled? Yes? All right. Now, this is from June Jordan. Do people know who June Jordan is? No. June Jordan, she died a few years ago. An activist, African-American activist and poet, right? And writer. To tell the truth is to become beautiful, to begin to love yourself, value yourself. To tell the truth is to become beautiful, to begin to love yourself, value yourself. All right, so this morning, I really worked on being with ourselves, our sense of where we are, either around our sense of wanting to enact change in some way and or accessing kindness, right? In helping others, often again, to change in some ways. And I'm going to give a little Dharma talk if you want to... Oh, I need Kevin. Oh, wow, he just disappeared whenever... Who's a volunteer?
What do you mean?
Because he's going to record this part.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Somebody needs to go find Kevin to record this part. Should we take a break? Do people need a break? Bathroom break or not? I don't know. It's after lunch. Okay. We'll wait then. We'll just wait. Any questions or comments from earlier or... No? About any, yeah, what we did or earlier. Anything came up at lunch? I don't know what was in the chocolate cake. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Except for the recipe, that's what I meant. Hey, you guys are so serious. Yeah. Maybe I'll tell you my favorite Buddhist joke, which I learned here actually, not in this room. But what do you say to a Buddhist dog? I know. No, us Buddhists, we're so obvious, aren't we? Are we stating the obvious?
what does the Buddhist person who told the dog to sit do if the dog does or doesn't?
You just keep saying, gently, sit. Say my other cat and dog recitation is now a dog, right? A dog says, "You feed me, you pet me, you love me. I'm a god." A cat says, "You love me, you feed me, you pet me. I must be the god." Mm-hmm. Isn't that true? That's the way. Okay, is it on now? Did she come in and do it, or she just come to see what needs to be done?
She's looking for Kevin. Or someone like that.
Oh, I think I told him 150 at one point, but that was before. Lunch went later and everything. Gosh, let's see, what else can I entertain you with? Well, I know. Here, I'll go ahead and tell you these things. I will say that, as I told you, I tweaked this a little bit. And to make sure you get your CEs, let me just talk to you about a couple other things. This workshop is a lot about change, and some of you already know this. So, of course, where is most of the research on change? Do people know? It's in the addiction field, of course. Right? Because that's where change is really important. So this is old and still very useful. I'm sorry, Kevin, I decided to do this. Are you going to be around for like 5, 10 more minutes? Okay. So this is from Prochaska and Di Clemente many years ago, and it still works. So in terms of the cycle of change, it's important to know. First, there's what's called pre-contemplation. This is before you even know it, right? But and people around, notice I try not to say but, right? So and people around you might notice. This is when your partner or your coworker, hopefully not your boss, but maybe, say, oh, Joe, maybe that's, you drink a lot, or you're often out, sick a lot, right? So people kind of, you don't even know it yet, but there's some aspect in your life. Then, obviously, contemplation. And you realize, oh, yeah, maybe I should do something about that, right? Maybe you step on this scale and it's just a few more pounds than you realize. Mm-hmm. So it's called contemplation. So you're starting to think about it. And then there's preparation. So you start to prepare. Now, many of us spend a lot of time here, right? Of course, I teach meditation. So a lot of people are like, oh, got to find the perfect zafu. Where's the perfect spot in my room? You know, even had one student who had to go find a platform to sit on. So we spend a lot of time, buying outfits, you know, right shoes, right spandex, whatever. Of course, is it, sorry, I get distracted and I think it's really funny. Blanked out, Walden Pond, who is it? Said, be leery of the profession that requires the change of new clothes, right? So, a lot of preparation. And then there's the action part, when you enact it. And then there's maintenance. When you do join the gym, and then maintaining it. So this is a big part. Same thing with meditation. Who knows? Who doesn't know that maintaining your meditation practice is the hardest? And then we can't forget this part. Relapse is part of the cycle, right? Now, sometimes this is put, actually, usually this is put as linear, usually from the bottom up. But I like to put it this way because at a certain level, there's some process to this, right? But also, if you, sometimes when you're relapsing, obviously these are kind of similar, but you might just start again at preparation or you just might go to action, right? So they don't have to go in that order. So a lot of time at relapse, you have to go back to either preparation, and often this part is not done well enough. And in fact, today, most of what we're doing is preparation. I'm trying to let you enact it a bit to go through it, because in the action, of course, makes all that happen. Okay. And of course, we're holding that with, this is the thing about how do we make change and then balance it out? All right, Kevin, I'm going now. Or have you been recording me the whole time? Oh, okay. Hope that it was all pithy. Okay, so we're talking today a lot about how to shift, make some shifts, how to access our motivation. So in times of making change or making shifts in our lives, there's a lot of difficulty, right? Even when the change is something we want. That's why they say, you know, if you're getting married, moving house, you know, changing jobs, that's like the most stressful year you've had, even though some of it might be really positive. Right. So, and in that time, a lot of conflicting, ambivalent emotions come up. If it's a loss of some kind, then of course there's often disbelief, denial, even anger, right? This is happening to me. And then there's also bargaining with pain and guilt, right? If I had only done that. And perhaps even depression, right? If there's like a change in role, sometimes we're like, oh, who am I now? And that can bring us down. So in life, there is suffering. We've determined that. There's disease, dissatisfaction, discontent. And most of it, we can't, even though we try very hard, things will happen that we don't want to happen. And so our practice, in a lot of ways, is finding out what are ways of responding. Right? How is it that I can respond here as opposed to react? So the key is, how is it that I'm doing this with a sense of volition? Right? Or I like to put it as, how do we, you know, oftentimes when things are happening that we don't want to happen, we feel like life's being done to us. So how is it that when life feels like it's a cage, we're in the cage, it becomes a container? How do we frame our experience in a way that makes us feel like it's holding us, and we're holding our experience, we're holding ourselves, we're holding the people in our lives, our situation in life, as opposed to really having that sense that it's being done to us? And this comes in seeing where we are right here and right now. And then from this grounded place, where is it that I can make the choice to respond? So here's do people know what a koan is? Should I say what a koan is? Yes. A koan is a teaching story. It's actually not a joke, or sometimes it seems paradoxical. The thing about koan, it does come from, many of them come from mostly from China. And the koans are teaching stories in the sense of, remember this morning I talked about how in our approach to life, for the most part, we have a story of what's happening in our lives, for our situation. And that story tends to be repetitive and circular. And a koan, and our mind tends to, and it's talked about in the teaching, our mind tends to fall into like grooves. We hear this in psychology too, right? They're like grooves that your mind, your thoughts kind of go down, and they just go down, the deeper the groove, the seemingly easier to go that way. And again, they tend to be cyclical. So what a koan does is that it kind of throws a wrench in your thinking. Usually it seems so like, huh? Because it's your regular way of processing and rationalizing and all that just doesn't quite work on it. And so it, hopefully, what it does is it kind of gives you a, what? Maybe even stop your thinking so that when it starts again, there's some sense of newness, some sense of re-seeing things, you could say, or seeing it again, or a different perspective on it. So here's a koan. Monk Zagan once accompanied his teacher Dogo on a condolence call to a family funeral. This is from 12th century China, right? When they arrived, he wrapped the coffin and said, "Alive or dead?" Master Dogo, that's the teacher, said, "I won't say alive, I won't say dead." Zagan, the monk, the student, said, "Why won't you say?" Dogo repeated, "I won't say, I won't say." So after their ceremony's over, they're walking home back to the temple. And the monk, Zagan, cried, "Tell me right now, teacher, alive or dead? If you don't, I will hit you." Mm-hmm. Master Dogo said, You may hit me, but I won't say. Say again, hit him. Now, after Master Dogo, the teacher, passed away, as in died, Zeigen went to see Dogo's successor, Sekiso, told him the story, and asked for guidance. Sekiso said, I won't say alive, I won't say dead. Zeigen again said, why won't you say? And Sekiso repeated, I won't say, I won't say. This time, Zeigen immediately realized it. She became enlightened. Hey, this is case 55 from the Blue Cliff Record. Any thoughts about this? Oh yeah, we need a mic for this. Any thoughts? Anybody wanna? What's coming up for you? Be brave, try it on. I was gonna say that.
Okay, so the thing I'm just
up.
Sitting here thinking is that the teachers, in repeating, I won't say, for me, listening to it, it just brought me to the picture and the sense of the teacher being right in the present. It was just this present moment, and that's all I thought.
Okay. Anyone else? Also, you can just share what comes up for you. It doesn't have to be about the story, even about your reaction to the story. Okay.
Well, what comes up for me is that earnest young monk. I have a picture of him as being a young monk and the elderly teacher. And I crave that, you know, have the older teacher, the grandmotherly teacher that helps with answers and when the issues are there. And she won't do that. That's a no. Mm-hmm. So that's what came up. We crave it, but that's not what we need.
Mm.
Or I crave it. That's not what I need.
Okay. Anyone else? Mm-hmm.
One of the things that stood out for me was his obsessiveness with getting him to say alive or dead. And it resonated with how sometimes we get stuck with that. We want the answer, we want the answer, we want it. And we want what we want.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean it's the best thing for us.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say one other thing?
Yeah, sure.
So you, to me also, in saying I'm not going to say, if the teacher said, you're not moving beyond sort of the present cage of it's either dead or alive, because really and truly, like, who knows? So.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes.
Maybe he was thinking some people are dead when they're alive and some people become alive after they die.
Mm. Anyone else? Okay. Now, remember that Koan's Zen stories that points us towards a perspective about how we can be in life and about living. And in essence, our practice is about how are we living our life right now. So, it isn't so much about finding the right answer. We do. We crave that. We crave that knowing. Right? And yet, our life is about meeting the moment. Right? And how is it that we just meet it? How do we most fully meet something? We think it's from knowing. We think if I have all the facts, especially like about clients, right? that we'll be able to, like, somehow do our job better. And, of course, by that I don't mean you shouldn't have some information. And to really meet what's here, we have to have that sense of what else is possible. Right? So this koan can be read as about the nature of life and death. Right? It is legit and important when Zagan demands, alive or dead. Is this person in the coffin alive or dead? So you could say he's saying, how do I know life and death? How do I know that I'm living my life fully? Can you say that? What is a Zen life and what is a Zen death, you could say. And yet Master Dogo says, I won't say. Because it is true. No one can say for you what is alive for you and what is dead. Now, when I first heard this koan at Tassara, the Monastery of Zen Center, that's what I took away from it. How do I meet it? How do I meet my life in this moment? How do I meet it? Can I meet it asking, oh, what is enlivening here? What is deadening here in this moment? So here's from John Tarrant, who's an Australian Zen teacher, and he tells a story. In the early days of his illness, when I spoke to Gregory Wilms about dying, I said, how's it feel to be dying? He said, everybody's dying. I just know my schedule. A little bit, right? Not the moment exactly. This is still John Tarrant. That's true, we all die. What we're haggling about is the timing and what we will give up. There's no need to wait to decide to give things up. No need to worry about the objects at all. Let's just give up our prejudices and our ideas right now. Give up that kind of clinging we have that closes the heart. If you look into your heart when you do zazen, meditation, you can see whether it's open or it's closed. If it's open, you'll be okay. If it's closed, it doesn't matter how clever you are, you won't be okay. There it is. I apologize, that's Gregory Williams saying this all. Is it open or is it closed? So again, this koan could be used as a guide as we go through our daily lives, either on the cushion or off, by asking, alive or dead? I'm here experiencing this moment, this situation, this person, and am I aware that it's bringing up a sense of connection, a sense of aliveness, or am I meeting it with a sense of deadness, or am I bringing forth a sense of unaliveness? Right? And again, the more and more I practice, the sense of the physicalness of that, I think, becomes more important. Right? Really know it in the body. Is there a sense of ease in the body? Just like people talked about, you know, when you're in all kindness, it's that relaxing that happens. Gratitude will give you that too. So then as a practice, we can also bring in intention, asked about before, on how we want to respond, how we want to meet these feelings. So is my intention to be open? If my intention is to be open, then how do I meet it with a feeling of openness? How do I meet it with ease? So it's been a great tool applying the koan in this way. Whenever I can remember, I say, oh, alive or dead. And, as some of you have brought up, a teacher, right? Can't say what is alive or dead for you. And in fact, that's why in Zen, you know, the expression we say the finger is just pointing at the moon. You know what that means, right? So the moon, if you don't know, in Japanese symbology, Zen, Japanese Zen symbology, it means enlightenment. Right, the moon. So the finger pointing at the moon is just that I'm pointing towards enlightenment, right? I can't tell you what enlightenment is. It's just anyone helping you is just directing. And it's the same with our client. How do we provide a way to just point them towards that direction? And I think it helps when you're very clear, right, that the, whoever you're helping is an enlightened being. Do you guys know who Mark Epstein is? Mark Epstein? Oh, he's a insight. He does the Benton too, but he's a psychologist. He was really big in the 90s. He wrote about, like, Thought Without a Thinker. He's a psychologist and a Buddhist practitioner. And he did a lot of practical work too, right? A practice. And then he went to see Ram Dass. Do you guys know who Ram Dass is, right? And who had had his stroke. And he went to see Ram Dass. And he was talking to Ram Dass about how hard it was, you know, to work with clients. And then Ram Dass said, Do you remember that they're already awake? So do we remember that our clients are already awake? Do we remember that the person in front of you is already an awakened person, already a Buddha? Right? I'm a Buddha, you're a Buddha. You know that when we bow, Thich Nhat Hanh said, when we bow, we're bowing to the Buddha of that person in front of you and the Buddha that's in here. So Buddha meeting Buddha, right, in the bow. And in Zen we say, in terms of Dharma transmission, it's warm hand to warm hand. It's the same sense, right? So, let's read the koan again. The teacher and the monk goes on a condolence call. And when they arrived, the student knocks on the coffin and says, alive or dead? And the master says, I won't say. I won't say. And the student says, why won't you say? And the master just says, I won't say, I won't say. So then the student going walking home asks again and said, this time I'll hit you if you don't. Right? And the master still says, I won't say, I won't say. And the student hits him. In some version, when they get home, he's asked to leave the temple, right? Because you don't get the teacher. And yet, after the master died, he asked the successor the same thing, alive or dead. And the teacher again said, I won't say, I won't say. And yet this time, he's enlightened. Now here's from John Daido Lori, who's a Dharma heir of Maizumi Roshi, also one of the first Japanese monk who started LA Zen Centers about the same time, a little after Suzuki Roshi of Zen Center. And John Daido Lori is a well-known teacher. He died a few years ago now too. He says, when Zaigen, the monk, demands to know alive or dead, he's asking question as, how do I know alive and how do I know dead? How do I know if I'm alive if I do this or I'm dead if I do that? What is my life if it's like this? What is my death if it's like that? And what is the ideal life and the ideal death? So again, important and pertinent questions. And if we live from that perspective, like to really ask in this moment, is my life living up to its potential or its fullness, which is really awakeness, right? We talk a lot about how to awaken, and yet awaken is fully clear about what's going on right here. So I won't say is that there's another alternative besides That duality I talked about earlier, that swinging from alive to dead. Right? What if it's just allowing that sometimes we know the sense of deadness? Right? We're not actually trying to get away from dead. In moments in our life where we just feel really heavy, right? We want to know what this is, because also our clients come to us really often really depressed, low motivated. So how, we're not here to, if we can't at least connect, by that I don't mean that, you know, our practice isn't to, you know, especially if they're suicidal ideation, you need to, of course, work to bring that up. And yet, how much of it is just a matter of being able to receive what is being presented to us? This is why, right, compassion is necessitated by understanding suffering, right? And being able to build the capacity to be with suffering. It's not fixing suffering, right? Doesn't mean that you can't alleviate, mind you. And yet so much of our practice is about being able to clearly see it for what it is and building the capacity to hold this. This is kindness. Kindness, remember, is about how is it that you continue the possibility for kindness to happen? And that comes with opening up, right? Building more capacity to know it and to be able to sustain it and to be able to expand our definition of it, right? Because my sense of what's kind might be different from what's kind for someone else. Like, in fact, I'm, you know, overly helpful, and I think that's kindness. You know, I'm so overly helpful. My girlfriend and I, who also happens to be a very, you know, like to help out kind of person, I just came up with this one time because, you know, we're always like, can I do this? And then someone would say no, and you're, are you sure? Are you sure? Right? And so then I thought we should just now have a phrase where we say, stand down, Florence, like Florence Nightingale, right? Stand down, Florence, right? Like, it's okay. I got this. So we have to have a sense of being able to not only let people have their experience, and but also to be able to hold their experience. I don't know how much, I will say that I learned so much from my practice when, one, I could be clear with my clients about what my needs are. Right? In fact, it was after doing a retreat, I realized, you know, I came in, turned on the light, at the same time pushed the button to turn on my computer, you know, started shuffling paper, entering the thing to hear on my voicemail. And then I realized, wow, for a whole week, I've just been doing things one thing at a time, right? So one, I just slowed down and did one thing at a time. Two, you know, like people, I think, sometimes I think being kind is just, yes, it's true, I have an open door policy, but I just let people come in and I just get overwhelmed. And so I really learned that it was kinder to say, hey, you know, I got three people here. Let me help X, Y, and Z, and then can you make an appointment? Like, just say, I can't do this. To be vulnerable, the big V word, right? Of course, you have to be careful with clients, how much vulnerable, what kind of information, and yet how much of it is just sharing that, oh, I have this work project I need to do, and I'd love to take care of your Xfinity bill, and can we do it in half an hour or an hour? So, yes, knowing our limits and being able to also include this one as what our needs are. What's important to us here, too? How can we stay alive and open and connected? And that includes ourselves. So can we allow for ourselves and our client to be as we are? And I will say that I like the word allowing, you know, because acceptance is, I think, a lot. Sometimes it's very hard to accept. So then to loosen it up, I say, oh, what can I allow right here? So that might be useful. Thich Nhat Hanh says, we practice so that each moment of our life becomes real life. We practice so that each moment of our life becomes real life. And real life is this one right here and right now. Real life is not the one we think we should have or the one we, you know, imagine. It's the one right now. So that's why it's so important for it to be what it is. And a lot of that has to do with allowing for not knowing. Can it be, this is me being open, this is me expressing kindness as I can, and then this is me having a hard time with that. This is me just going, okay, I need a little space. Or even that I feel close. I think sometimes if we could just acknowledge that, right, and just say right here, right now, this is how I feel. Almost like patting yourself in the, you know, going, it's okay that you're feeling overwhelmed. It's okay to not feel kindness. Can we just accept that in that moment? And also remember that it will change. This is just me being closed or open. And can we just allow for it to be? That when I'm open, I'm open. When I'm closed, I'm closed. And that's all. Right? Not how I should be. Again, that discursive mind, it's not a bad thing when you want to, you know, when you have to write up your report or choose, you know, which ice cream to have. But when is it that we can just allow that we don't know or that this moment is difficult and can I just be with it? And know that it's not a forever state. This is when impermanence becomes your friend. Right? Open is not a forever state. Closeness is not a forever state. Kindness will change into unkindness or not kindness feeling. And not kindness can change into kindness. So can it just be in this state? One in which we don't have to really even understand or solve. Maybe it is true. The I won't say is really I can't say. I just can't say what it is for you. Our clients also come to us looking for answers. And can we just be there to receive? These days, I'm not even sure that reflecting back is necessary. We just reflect what is, and then we try to let things reveal themselves to you. Dogen, the founder of Soto Zen, says that to go forth and experience myriad things is delusion. That myriad things come forth and experience themselves is awakening. I'll say that again. To go forth and experience myriad things is delusion. That mere things come forth and reveal themselves is awakening. How much of our life we go through and we see something and we interpret, right? We see this person and we say, this is how she is or how he is or how they are. And again, when we have clients, we have some sense, right? And can we build that space in to say, oh, how is Joe going to reveal himself to me today? Again, we're not throwing out. We're not, you know, the not knowing isn't like you don't have knowledge or expertise or experience. And yet, can we expand that to open up so that myriad things can reveal, myriad people, myriad experiences, including our own emotions and thoughts, to come forth and reveal themselves. And this takes being open and curious and allowing for the possibility. Here's from Rumi. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the threshold where the two worlds meet. The door is round and open. don't go back to sleep. Say it again. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the threshold where the two worlds meet. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. When we go out in the world, or when we are right here and right now, we think there's this and then there's the world, right? And it's always and it is on a certain level. Of course, we're not just confined to this, and yet this is majority of our experience. And so can we remember that this is always the interaction with the world, right? And are we willing to leave the door open so that there's, you know, an interaction? Which again doesn't mean that sometimes you might not need to back away from the door a little bit. Maybe even have a little gate sometimes, right? And is it possible to live in a way that we honor and pay attention to and cultivate that open door where the two worlds are always meeting? So, I think a way to do this is actually to, you know, take a practice, right? Take something you learned from here today and just practice it, right? And I will say, this is maybe don't try to add to it or take away from it even. Just to hold it and try it out. Try it on. And then in the trying it on, this can also go for the rest of the day. Where's the harmonizing? I used to say balance, but now I really like harmonizing. Where's the harmonizing of making effort and the ease, right? Where it doesn't take effort? Where is it that we intentionally act in a way that, you know, we might interpret as kindness, or we happen to know that client will interpret as kindness? And so it does take some effort. And where is it that you just let your, the way we would speak, let your heart lead? Just hold that as a possibility that it can just be an easeful, not doing so much, as an acting. And then I think what helps that is to have some trust and faith, right? Trust and faith in the method, trust and faith in your good heart. Trust and faith that, you know, this is where that equanimity is about much bigger, right? In terms of karma, you have to understand the bigger picture. What is the bigger picture? And in the bigger picture, mostly we can learn to sit back, wouldn't you say? If you just are looking at the narrow, it's harder to go, okay, I'll just leave that alone. But when you see it in the bigger perspective, then there's some sense of, oh, okay, I'll wait to see how it plays out completely. So trust and faith in the intention and the method, in yourself, again, your good heart. And then you want to allow for other options to arise, unknown, unforeseen, from yourself and or the client or other people. So in any interaction, right, it's the possibility of transformation. Right? Even the person you think you know so much, be it yourself in the mirror or your partner or best friend or whatever, or client, can it be that when you sit down or when you meet them, to just really go, oh, I wonder what's going to happen here? And can I do that with an attitude of willingness, right? Maybe even excitement, I will say. Be curious about what might happen right here and right now. And Zen, we have an expression, in fact, Romy was just saying my name a little bit earlier, and right away I was like, hi. Right? It's H-A-I. It's not like hi, not like hi. And you aren't supposed to say it like that. You say hi. Right? And it means, yes, I will. It's kind of like that trying it on, right? Will you try it on? Yeah, hi. Yes, I will. It's like an attitude of, yes, I'm willing. So I wonder if we can just meet our life with, hi, yes, I will. So say, yes, you will, in any way you can. Just a little aside, I will say that these days, I say, fake it till you make it. Right? By faking, I don't mean like, you know, like unauthentic. Just more like sometimes like there is something to, we put so much weight in being prepared, and yet how much of our life is just stepping into the moment with as much that kind of like faith that I'm going to be able to make it. Right? That kind of, maybe faith is a better word than fake it. Faith it till you make it. Maybe I'll try that. I just copyright that. Do not put that anywhere else. That's my bumper sticker. The breeze at dawn has secrets to tell you. Don't go back to sleep. You must ask for what you really want. Don't go back to sleep. People are going back and forth across the threshold where the two worlds meet. The door is round and open. Don't go back to sleep. Thank you. Any questions or comments? And I like to say I take challenges, if you haven't figured that out already. Okay, where's the mic?
So, I'm going back to the story of the alive or dead.
Mm-hmm.
So in some stories I've read, like, you know, that book, Dropping Ashes on the Buddha, it's out of print, but it's an old book, mm-hmm. where it's all koans with between the student and the master.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times when I've read some of these things, it goes on and on with the same two people and, you know, he doesn't get it right or whatever. And then somewhere in the end, the student whaps the teacher. And then that was it. That was the answer. That was enlightenment. So that's all.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you have thoughts about that.
Oh. Well, in this case, he didn't become enlightened after whacking the teacher, right? In Zen, I will say, you know, some people do say to me, oh my God, there's so much violence in all the Zen stories. The thing about the one, we should say that most of these come from monastic practices, which were men. Even, you know, we are very fortunate on a certain level in the West that it's very gender mostly gender neutral, or access to, well, not gender neutral, access to, well, we're doing pretty good about transgender these days. Anyways, it's mostly men in the monastery, so that's one thing. Two, there's a sense in Zen, this is the way it's similar to me saying I take challenges. In Zen, don't forget that Zen arose historically as a revolution, right? That instead of only certain people becoming able to be enlightened, that all of us are already enlightened. So it has a revolutionary spirit. So a lot of it has to do with like, oh, go ahead, challenge me, right? And in Zen, our practice as a teacher, this is the same thing where basically today, I'm trying to create a container for you all to enact change or a sense of some kind of shift for yourself. I'm not really here, like I'm just pointing at the moon, but I already see you all as moons. And I'm just hoping that you will see it too. And so the more you interact with me, and the more you interact with me in a way that is outside of normal interaction is really celebrated in Zen, because it's very much like social norm isn't so important in Zen, because we're really kind of iconoclast at being revolutionary. Newness and spontaneity is really big. So there's a lot of yelling too and stuff. Yeah, like energy. In fact, you know, the word for Dharma talk in Japanese is called teisho, and it translates as an expression of the shout. Right? I'm not really up here to give you information. I'm up here to give you a sense of life. So expression of the shout. You know, like, ah, this is life. This is why there's always so much yelling too in those koans. Right? You're just like, ah! Right? Want to try it? Come on, it's after lunch. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Ah! Here. Gives you energy too, doesn't it? Anyone else? And now I'm going to get a lot of resistance. It's not the same as resistance, by the way. That might appear that way. Yes, Mike? Okay. How's your name?
I'm Kat. I go by she and her. My question was around the aspect you mentioned about delusion and stepping into each moment in real life. I'm curious if you could expand on that, like how to move away from like just living in perception and delusion, moving more into like realness.
The only way is to do it. You don't know what real is until you're there, right? So that's just why, again, the motto of Zen is just try it on, you could say, or just do it, if, you know, Nike hadn't taken it already, right? And it is very much about how do we just be? I think, like, Jack, what is the one that Jack always uses about from the writer, what's that, Irish writer, where Mr.
Huff,
what? Duffy. It's a step away from his body. He's always living, like, you know. So it's a similar kind of idea of that. Like, how can we just be in our life? And of course, we can just talk about it, but the only way to do it is just to try it on. And so that's why so much of it is, notice this workshop is a lot of interaction, and a lot of it's, we need to practice that. And this goes with doing. I'm really sorry if that didn't help. Keep on trying. Yeah. Okay, saying yes more often helps. Okay, anyone else? Yes.
I just wanted to say I really appreciated the story, the koan, because I feel like there's been over the past years, when I started out in this practice, I feel like I really needed someone to tell me, and I really needed a guide, and it was really important at first. And I feel like over the past couple years, there's been just more of this, like, needing things to really come from my own inner knowing and my own authenticity, and I've had to really, like, let go of a lot of that old, like, really relying on other people, and that has been scary, to, like, have the faith in myself, to, like, let go of that, and, like, trust that I can, like, move forward from my own authenticity, and so I just appreciated that reminder.
Part of that is being willing to make mistakes, yeah, and also remembering can start again all the time, right, start again. Really is true. Any other thoughts or comments? Okay, here's from Grace Lee Boggs. Do people know Grace Lee Boggs? She was a civil rights leader, mostly in the Detroit area. She also wrote a book. I think she might have just died recently. She wrote a book on the ecology not too long ago, right? You don't choose the times you live in or the circumstances, but you do choose who you want to be, and you do choose how you think. You don't choose the times you live in or your circumstances, but you do choose who you want to be, and you do choose how you think. All right. Now, this afternoon, should we take a break? Yeah, let's take a break. Let's take a 10-minute break.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.